Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony, and I'm joined in the studio by Matt. How are you, Matt?
Good, thanks, Tony. How about yourself?
Yep, all good.
Good?
Yeah, certainly a lot has been happening out there in the world and here in New Zealand as well. I don't know. I have this sort of sense that we're heading for a perfect storm, in a sense, like we've been, or we are in the birth pangs that Jesus spoke about in the Gospels. And even this morning, I was woken by a 5.2 earthquake. That's nothing greatly unusual here in New Zealand, but still, did you feel that one?
No,
Matt?
I didn't. I was apparently doing something at the time, so I didn't feel it at all. But talked to a few people that did feel it, and it was pretty much a routine earthquake for here in New Zealand, the shaky Isles.
Yeah, it's not uncommon, you're right. But there's been a few of them in the last couple of weeks, so it does make you wonder if something big is brewing.
Indeed.
Because they've been in the same area.
Yeah.
And speaking of earthquakes, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about earthquakes globally and the number of them, and people talking about the New Madrid fault and also the San Andreas fault, how it's locked and loaded and ready to go, supposedly.
Yeah, there was a report, I think, last week where a scientist said that this plate is just sitting ready to go, and it could produce a very big earthquake. So whatever that means, I'm not quite sure, but it sounds like it's something that could be quite catastrophic as well, too.
And all over the world, I think there's potential for that, Japan and other places as well. And that's just one thing. You know, I think I have a distinct sense that we are not far away from some real severe economic collapses, and even possibly bank holidays and bank closures.
Yeah, it's I mean, this year started off very badly with, you know, I think it was something in the order of between 20 to 25% that got wiped off the share market. And it kind of seems like it's really gone quiet over that period of time. But there are some worrying reports that have been coming out with regard to certain banks. I think Deutsche Bank is a pretty precarious situation. And they're just quietly, you know, sitting there in the background, putting these worried reports out. And I think it's all, you know, they're trying to keep a lid on it, but it's at some point it's going to go, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a lot of other banks, the Italian banks as well.
Yeah.
We hear our, you know, well, they keep pretty quiet, though. They're not going to come out and go, oh, we are going to fail soon,
no,
eh?
Exactly, yeah.
But you've got to look at the number of billionaires and banks, et cetera, that are putting money into physical gold.
Yes.
And you've got to ask why.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah, a physical asset. I mean, if they're doing that, then why? Yeah, exactly, why are they doing it? It's gold and silver is one of those things. If you've got it in a physical asset, it's a really good wealth protection thing. You know, if you've cash, at the end of the day, it can be destroyed, it can be burned, it can be made worthless. And I think that's what a lot of people probably a little bit concerned about as well, too, is the fact that we've got currencies can be devalued very quickly, fiat currencies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's good to have some cash on hand, particularly if there are bank holidays or closures or anything like that.
Absolutely.
That initial period is going to be probably vital for people to have cash. But long term, I don't think holding lots of cash is going to be the answer.
No. It's interesting. We're talking about earthquakes and things. I had relatives that were involved in the Christchurch earthquake. Well, there were two big earthquakes down there. 2010, and they were, I think it was about October, and then February 2011. Now, my relatives tell me that right after the earthquake, there was no FPOS available. There were no bank machines that were working. The only thing that people could use was cash. If you had cash, you could buy petrol, you could buy water, you could buy food, you could buy replacement things that, you know, whatever had been broken. You could buy a generator because a lot of the power had gone out. People, you know, the water had gone down, and there was all sorts of damage and destruction that had happened. If people had cash, they had something there ready and available to use, because they couldn't use their bank cards, they couldn't use their credit cards, and they couldn't access the ATM machines. So if you didn't have cash, you're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah, that's dead right. And then on the other side of that, when they had the in Greece, they had the bank closures in Greece last year. People even with safe deposit boxes couldn't get into the bank. So
That's right.
If people had metal, precious metal or cash or whatever in safe deposit boxes, they were unavailable because the banks were closed, and so therefore, and there was even talk about them being able to confiscate that stuff anyway. So you want stuff well and truly out of the banking system, and having some cash, whether it's a bank closure or an earthquake or another natural disaster, having some cash is going to be pretty important.
And I mean, we don't know whether or not what it's going to be, because I mean, we've had some big earthquakes in the world lately, Japan and Ecuador, you know, and we don't know. I mean, New Zealand, we're not called the Shaky Isles for no reason at all. And we've had some big quakes here, and we're certainly expecting it. So we need to be prepared here. We need to have those things available. And you don't know where else it's going to happen in the world. You know, I'm thinking in terms of weather catastrophes and cyclones and things like that, as well as, you know, banks closing or there being some kind, I mean, it could be nuclear war. Who knows? It could be a war situation. The thing is to make sure that you've got something at your home in terms of cash. It's a really useful thing to have, because if you've got that, at least you've got a quick, you know, ready source of something to pay for a bit of extra water or a bit of extra food or whatever you need, really. So have a think about that, people. It's just something worth, you know, you don't need to tell anyone else that you've got it in your house. You can just squirrel a bit away, perhaps put it in a jar on top of a shelf or something like that. But just have a bit of extra cash around.
That's interesting. We also have a move towards a cashless society, which we're going to get into in this show a bit more. We've got a few things to say there. But going back to the preparedness thing, what's been going through my mind a little bit the last few days is we all should have a stash of food and things, you know, to last a period of time in the home, and your basic supplies, you know, fresh water is really important. But what's been going through my mind is, what about if you have to get out quickly? Say there is a big earthquake or some other natural disaster. I've been thinking, well, the importance of actually having a bag or a pack or something that's perhaps even in your car with enough to last, say, 3 or 4 days, a bit of food, maybe freeze-dried food or whatever, and warm blankets and some spare clothes, some fresh water, medical kit, you know, the different things like that, and some cash. And some silver, I believe, too.
Yeah. Interesting you talk about, I call it my bug-out bag. That's what's commonly referred to. I have one of these in my workplace, in my locker that I keep there, just in case something happens while I'm at work. So I have that there, and it's got in it, it's got a little first aid kit.
Yeah.
It's got a little pocket knife. It's got a little cheap plastic poncho, a raincoat. It's got some extra clothes in it, some socks, some underwear. It's got those kinds of things. And it's also got some emergency food as well. For around 17 New Zealand dollars, I purchased, I have no idea what they taste like, but it's a brick of 9 packets of food. They each, it's like a little square, square bar is probably the best way of describing it, but each of those square blocks of food contains around 400 calories, and there are 12 of them. So we're talking about 9 of them, sorry. So there's about 3 days worth of food there, they say. You can buy that, as I said, for around 17 New Zealand dollars. It just sits in there. It keeps, it's long lasting. They say that the shelf life's about 5 years, but they actually, and the indications are it actually lasts a bit longer.
Right.
So it's things like that. It was relatively cheap to put together. It wasn't expensive. Most of the stuff came from one of the, you know, the little cheap shops. You can $1, $2, $3 shop or something like that. You can buy these little raincoats. You can buy a little emergency. It's got a little foil emergency blanket in it. And it's also got a tarpaulin, which cost a couple of dollars through one of these shops as well, too, a little. So it's just got all the things that if I needed to walk home, I would have enough food to last me for 3 days. Not that it's going to take me that long to walk home, but you just don't know. It's enough to kind of get me from one place to another and provide a bit of shelter. It provides a first aid if I need it. It's got a little pocket knife if I need to use that for any reason. So just think about these things. They're not expensive to put together. You don't have to put a lot of effort into it, but it's having it ready and available.
That might be a good thing to put a make a little article for the website. Indeed. There, Matt.
Indeed. Yep.
Because I'm sure other people will go, okay, what should we put in there? So that would probably make a good article.
There are some really good articles out there, websites telling people what to put in bug out bags, but I find that, I mean, it probably varies from country to country what you would buy and what you could get. But yeah, I'll say that'll be a work in progress.
Yeah, sounds good. So it brings me to another point. I was thinking cash is important, obviously, but I believe that if we do have bank holidays and things, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time that the economic collapse is going to happen. We may not be too far away from it, and I believe that. Firmly believe that silver, having some silver, is going to be a very good investment. And just today I was reading the SRS Rocco report, 11th of May, the total number of silver maples and eagles in 2015, the sales that is, amounted to 81.3 million ounces. The total silver mined in all of the United States and Canada in 2015 was only 47.6 million ounces. That means there was a deficit of 33.7 million ounces just from silver maples and eagles versus the mine supply from North America.
Mm.
Okay, but you have to add to that also, there's around 40 to 50 million ounces of other coins and rounds or silver bars that's not included there, as well from various other mints. So if you add that together, that makes one heck of a big deficit. In other words, folks, a day of reckoning is coming when there will not be enough silver to supply the demand. The US and Canadian mints have to actually import silver to meet their current needs. But how long is that going to last? And if you're interested, you can find the title of that article was Surging North American Silver Investment Pushes Domestic Supply Deficit to New Record.
Yeah. I was reading the other day also that silver has been one of the best performing metals along with gold and platinum out of anything that you could put your investments in. I think this year it's been sitting at around 18 or 19, 20%, something in that order. I mean, that, as we know, that can change if they decide to, put the squeeze on silver and drop its value. But long term, I mean, it's going to be worth so much more, just so much more. As Tony pointed out, it's becoming in short supply. People are buying it up because they know that it's got value now, but it's going to have significantly more value in the future. It is really cheap to buy today compared to a lot of other things. Silver is just so cheap to buy. You can buy it over the internet, and there are also bullion dealers around. If you have a look, who will sell you physical silver as well too. So that's one of the things that that you can look at. But please, folks, if you've got a little bit of extra money, it's really important to have a think about buying some silver. Gold is out of the reach of most people, but silver is not, and I believe it is very significantly undervalued.
Yeah, when you say gold being out of the reach of most people, I noticed that. You know, so many of the articles out there are saying gold, 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 buy gold, spend your money on gold. But for a lot of people, they don't have enough money now to be able to hardly get by. So there's no way that a lot of people have got money for gold. But as you say, just a bit of silver is not expensive. And if you accumulate it while there's a chance, because the day's going to come when you're not going to be able to. And at that point, silver is going to escalate.
That's right. Absolutely, it will. And it's something that could potentially save your life as well, too.
Yeah, I agree. So getting food, having plenty of food stored and a supply of fresh water is vital. And then after that, I think silver is definitely something to be looking at getting. But I just don't think the window of time is going to be all that long before it's not going to be able to be so easy to get.
It's I believe that at times, particularly when things get a little bit rough or you see a bit of a blip in the stock market or something happens, people rush in to buy a few precious metals. So it's a little bit quiet at the moment, but it would be worth looking at it if you can. If you know where to get it from, or just have a look around and see where you can get it from, just get a bit. That's, as Tony says, food and water first, and then if you've got some money, some silver.
Yes. Basically, God has to come first. Get your spiritual life in order, as Chris always says. You know, that's yeah. Number one priority, and we've got to stress that. These other things are preparations that we can do physically, but if we don't have our spiritual house in order, our lives are going to collapse like a house of cards when the pressure really comes on. Mm-hmm. That's got to be bottom line.
Yep. It is the most important thing, actually, for people. And it costs you nothing to develop a relationship with God. And that's kind of like the foremost thing that I would be encouraging people to do at the moment, is that get your priority right with God. It's like if you've got that in order, everything else tends to follow behind. There are a lot of people out there today who are looking for that. Well, they're concerned about what's going on. I mean, Tony and I, we're talking here tonight about the fact that there's a lot of things that are building towards what we see potentially is quite a catastrophic event occurring. And we think it's probably not too far away as well. So please, folks, if you haven't got yourself sorted with God, please do that. It's about, you know, developing your relationship with Jesus. That's one of the most crucial thing. In fact, is the most crucial thing that you'll ever do, because if you've got that right, then everything else follows behind.
Yeah, I agree totally. Hey, just off the track a little bit, but I see that London City actually have just elected a Muslim mayor. That's pretty much the first Western city to elect a Muslim mayor, I believe, Sadiq Khan. Now, what I want to just stress here is people need to understand that there is a difference between the City of London and London City. Okay? They're two completely different entities, not to be confused. The City of London, which is run by the City of London Corporation, is controlled basically by the Rothschild dynasty, Rothschild family, the Illuminati, etc., etc. They control the City of London, and that is run by the Lord Mayor of the City of London, who is elected once a year. Okay, and his name is Geoffrey Evans. So don't be confused, because the mayor that the London City has just elected, Sadiq Khan, has got nothing to do with that piece of land, that square mile or whatever it is in the middle of London that is called the City of London, where the financial district of London is. So people need to realise that there are two separate entities there, not to be confused. But, you know, that new Muslim mayor, Mr. Sadiq Khan, made this statement regarding Republican hopeful Donald Trump. He said this: Donald Trump's ignorant view of Islam could make both of our countries less safe. It risks alienating mainstream Muslims around the world, and get this, and plays into the hands of extremists. So what are you saying, Mr. Khan? Do you believe that Islam is a religion of peace? Or are you saying the religion of peace won't be so peaceful if Donald Trump is elected? You're a Pakistani by descent. Just how peaceful and tolerant are the Muslims in Pakistan? In my view, the West is signing its death warrant and London just went insane.
Isn't it interesting? I read an article today which basically said 30 years ago it would have been people in London would have laughed at you if you'd have said that in 30 years' time there would be a Muslim mayor. But look at it today. This is where it's come. And I think it's an indictment of what the UK has done in terms of their policies. And I think it's very much a sign of where we're at today in the world as well too.
Yeah, and the West, you just look at Europe, I mean, the changes, and just when I was saying a perfect storm coming, I just see so many different facets that this is taking. It's all converging. The signs are converging, as like Matthew 24 or Luke 21 said.
Yeah.
It's all happening really quickly. And another part of that is the whole Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 thing that we're all being ring-fenced in. I believe you've got a little bit of information on something there, Matt.
Interesting. I emailed a friend in Canada, or friends, and this is in relation to the wildfires that have been raging around Fort Murray. And I just wanted to know what was happening. Because I knew that they lived in Alberta and they probably had a bit of a handle on what was going on there. And I got a very large response back from these folk about what was actually going on. And it blew me away because I didn't realise that there was a lot more behind these wildfires than we are hearing through the mainstream media. I've actually written an article and reproduced an edited version of the email that I got from my friends and just written a bit of a comment about it, because when I really look closely at what was happening with the fires in Fort Mac, as they call it in Canada affectionately, there had been some interesting things that may have contributed to these fires actually being the wildfires that they are. Okay, so 80,000 people were evacuated from the Fort Murray and the surrounding area as a result of these fires. And so that's put a lot of, I mean, just think about the insurance claims, the whole bit, and the people fighting the fires, all those sorts of things, everything that's gone into it, property destruction, displacement, it's just a shambles. How did these fires start? We're not really sure. Someone says it was possibly a campfire. These fires are common in this area. You know, it's not unusual. My friend said that there was a fire that came very close to one of the, because you've got the oil sands around the area. It's an oil producing area. About 5 years ago, a big, fairly big fire came close to one of these encampments in the area. So looking at what has occurred this year, this is the worst fire they've had that I'm aware of. My friend talked about the fact that the firefighting budget for this area of Alberta had been cut by 80%, okay, a month before the fire occurred. It had been a warm winter and it was a warm, dry spring. These are conditions that Albertans know cause wildfires. So it's almost like you're asking for problems if you want to cut the budget.
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau has been promoting, along with the Premier Rachel Notley of Alberta, very strict kind of Agenda 21 policies. They've been firmly pushing these into place, wanting to, you know, to reduce their carbon footprint. And it was interesting, Tony remarked the other day when we were talking about this, is that when you've got a forest fire of these proportions, yeah, how much is that doing for your carbon footprint?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
But if you have a look at the article, there are a lot of links to the research that's been done both by myself and by my friends in Canada, and it will show you a very clear picture of the Agenda 2130 policies that have actually worked their way towards creating the situation at Fort Mac. I mean, read it for yourselves, see what you think, but for me personally, these policies are almost directly responsible for what's occurred there.
Yeah, it's a very, very well-written article, and it should go viral as far as I'm concerned. People need to know the truth behind the climate change debacle and the Agenda 21 debacle that goes along with it, because all it is designed to ring-fence people into the system, the New World Order system. And you'll find that article of Matt's at the moment is on our front page. It'll be also in the archives. It's definitely well worth a read. I believe too, Matt, you got a little bit of information about the cashless society move.
Yeah, and going back to that, I was reading an article today, and I'll just put my glasses on. There seem to be some fairly definite moves afoot to consider cashless society. And it's all in the name of protecting us from the criminals. However, when you look at a cashless society, in an ideal world, it's probably a good thing. However, we know that we're not living in an ideal world. So we know that if you've got control of cash, and you know, particularly from a government or a global perspective, you're able to control what people are doing. Now, the article I read today had a word called blockchain in it, and I just had a wee look at what that was. Apparently, just recently, there were groups of bankers that had got together and talked about how they could implement a safer use of cash and finance in a digital world. So of recent times, a piece of software called blockchain, and please look this up for yourself, check it out. Blockchain has been developed to make cash into digital currency. It's a software that will make transactions, financial transactions throughout the world, very seamless, very easy and traceable. Okay, traceable, just
Remember that word. Yep.
Traceable. And also they will, you know, use one system of currency for this. So blockchain is something that will come up. You'll hear about it again. It's a piece of software that I believe is being used or will be used. It has it been used now to implement a cashless system of digital currency. One of the things that the article I read on it didn't really say, but reading between the lines, was it would be so much easier to use if you had one type of currency to use as a global one currency. So just have a think about that one too as well, folks.
It's interesting how they're using the argument that cash, that criminals use cash. You know, when I was a kid, I mean, I'm old enough that young kids would call me old, but old people call me young, so I've been around for a wee while. Okay, now when I grew up as a kid, you know, you'd have a bit of a job, maybe mow a lawn or something, you'd get a little bit of cash, and you stick it in the bank if you didn't spend it on lollies and and dinky toys and whatnot. But you know, you'd try and build a little bit of money up in the bank, and in those days, you might have $10 in the bank, you know, and it would gain interest. It would actually get interest, and there were no such thing as bank fees. And it was like, you know, you'd go, oh, yeah, the money's a little bit more money all the time. But no bank fees. And all the banks were like regional banks, weren't they?
They were regional, yeah, that's right. Yep.
Exactly, no national sort of thing. And then they were taken over by a sort of a national-type bank, and then eventually they were sold offshore. And by that stage, we were starting to get bank fees. And if you didn't have a lot of money in the bank fees well and truly were more than the interest that you would get.
Could be gobbled up, couldn't they?
Exactly. And the thing is, nobody thought twice about cash. You know, you'd be paid in cash and nobody cared. When I started working, you know, my first job and was all cash, or not even just my first job, we used to get paid in cash, didn't we?
That's right, absolute little paper envelope.
Might have a security truck come along or whatever and deliver them, but everybody got paid in cash. Did that make us criminals?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
No, of course not. It was the way it was, and nobody thought twice about it. Meanwhile, like I say, you start then, we got FBOS machines came along and the whole thing began to change, because I remember the day we were told, oh, we could no longer be paid in cash, that we had to have a bank account that the money was going to go into.
Right.
And it was like, oh, okay, that sounded convenient, didn't it? But you could still go and use your card at the FBOS machine and take your cash out, which is what everyone did. Nobody bought with FBOS. They just used the FBOS to get cash. Were we criminals? Did anybody even think about it being a criminal act? Of course not. But then these days, it's sort of like a very clever scheme that they've got us slowly to the point where it's like, hang on, we've got to ring fence people. We're going to get rid of cash because then we can have control. And that's the whole thing. Once cash is gone,
that's right,
they have total control because then there's nothing to stop the banks from charging whatever fee they want, going to negative interest rates.
That's right, negative interest rates, yep.
And then you've got no way out of the system because if cash is gone, and they're already making calls for it, especially they start with the big notes, don't they?
That's like
the $100 notes.
That's
only criminals use $100 notes, that's supposedly.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, here's an example. Just recently I was talking to a guy and he went and was going on a charter boat. And he was very concerned because the charter boat wanted cash rather than an FBOS, because it was just so much easier for them. They didn't have an FBOS machine on the boat and all that. And he was going, but how do I know they're going to pay tax? And they could be criminals. I mean, for goodness sake, a few years ago, who cared? Everyone dealt with cash.
That's right, yeah.
And he said, well, they should ban cash, you know. I think cash is for criminals. And he'd been obviously listening to the official mainstream media line.
Yeah.
And and then he was very concerned. Yes, I think cash is a bad thing. We should ban cash. And I started saying to him, well, have you actually thought about this? The negative interest rates, what we've just mentioned, and the bank fees, and how the government could then track everything that you buy. They could they could go, Matt, that fellow Matt, he's a Christian, that guy, and we don't like some of his political point of views. I think we will stop him being able to make purchases. And then what can you do about it? Because you're stuck in that system.
Absolutely, that's right,
The guy I was talking to, he hadn't even thought along these sort of things. He looked at me like, oh, yeah. He could be right.
It's like the privacy issues, and they're very similar. If you look at people say, you know, like with the NSA wanting to spy on people and all the rest of it, the surveillance, the society, people say, well, you know, if you're not doing anything wrong, what have you got to worry about? And my perspective on that is that what if you get a regime change in a country where your face no longer fits, for whatever reason, you become the political enemy of the state, then does the surveillance society matter? And it's the same thing with cash. It's like people, on the whole, I mean, most people with cash, they'll want to buy a bit of this, buy a bit of that and spend it. But if you've got a solely digital currency where you've got no cash, you've got no other means for buying and selling goods, then if the banking system falls over, if your digital currency is unavailable for any reason, or as with a privacy issue, your face no longer fits, as Tony pointed out, you know, if you all of a sudden become under scrutiny and they decide that they're going to stop your cash flow or digital currency flow, so to speak, then what are you going to do? What are you going to use to buy and sell? How are you going to provide for your needs if you haven't got that ready source of income available? So just, have a think about that one.
Of course, the other thing is, if all your money is in a bank, what happens if the bank starts failing and then they enact the law that we have in New Zealand, which is the open bank resolution, and pretty much every other country now has a similar law where you're an unsecured creditor your money is in the bank is no longer yours. It's actually the bank's. And if the bank starts going under, they will use your money to bail themselves out.
Yeah. It's interesting. I know people that have got fairly large sums of money in the bank, and I've talked to them about the open bank resolution and about the possibility that, you know, if the banks fail, that money could be taken. And the banks say, well, what we'll do is we'll convert it into shares so that you'll have shares in the bank. But if those shares are worthless,
yeah,
what good is it to you? So that's another thing to think about as well, too, is that if you do have large sums of money in the bank and, you know, it goes, currency goes digital and their banks fail, you can potentially lose the lot. You could potentially lose everything.
Yeah, which is why we come back to that, what we said before about the precious metals, gold and silver, and particularly silver, I think, because, as we said earlier, it's more affordable, and the upside of silver is going to be a lot more than gold, I believe, because the ratio is all out of whack. Traditionally, gold and silver has a ratio of somewhere between 10 and 20 to 1 in terms of the price difference. Well, at the moment, it's closer, getting 70 to 80 to 1. That means gold is worth 70 times what silver is worth, whereas traditionally throughout history, it's not been worth anything like that difference. So when this crunch really happens and the currencies of the world begin to collapse, as we believe they will, that gap is going to close. So though gold may go up quite significantly, percentage-wise, silver will go up much faster.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's something to think about, that, you know, you need to understand that we're heading into some pretty rough times. Biblically speaking, Matthew 24, we're very much, I believe, into that birth pang period now, where those birth pangs that Jesus talks about are just getting bigger and bigger, you know.
And more close together.
And closer together.
Yeah.
The description that Jesus used, I mean, it was a very good one, because when you think about a process of a normal labor for a woman going through childbirth, it's the contractions start off small and then they get bigger and bigger and closer together as well too. And then, you know, obviously more painful as they go as well. So I'm expecting that, you know, we're going to see some really troubled times ahead.
Yes, I agree.
I think one of the things that because I've talked a bit of, about Christchurch before, the earthquake situation there, and having relatives go through it. And I think for us here in New Zealand, that's been a really good wake-up call for the fact that we can have. Christchurch was not an area that had any fault zones in it. It was never expected to have earthquakes, and they had two big, devastating earthquakes there. The people there are still, I think, recovering to some degree from it, but, you know, they learnt a lot of valuable lessons about what happens when you get a serious situation occurring. So just think about, once again, just think about what you can do to prep. I mean, you might not have a lot of money, but you can always just put a little bit of food aside each week. It might just be a can of whatever, spaghetti or a can of soup or something. Just see if you can try and put something aside. Bottled water is really cheap to buy. You can buy, you know, quite a big block of bottled water for between $5 and $10, so it's not overly expensive. If you get one of those, just put it aside. You know, that could save your life at some point in time. But the first thing to remember is your relationship with God. That's the most important thing.
Absolutely. And just back to the water, also on the A Minute to Midnight website, if you go into the we've got survival and prepping, I think I've got a couple of good videos there on how to actually make a simple and very effective water purifier. So that's another thing that people could look at, as a means to be able to purify water if they get to the stage where they don't have, you know, tap water that they can use. Absolutely. Or they run out of bottled water.
Yeah.
So, think about these things, folks. You know, don't put it off. because in a disaster, the supermarkets are not going to be open, and if they are, they're going to be cleaned out really fast.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if there's a bank closures, bank holidays, well, that'll close everything down for a period of time, and your cash flow cards may not work. You may not have access to money. It could be like Greece. Even now in Greece, I think pretty much a year on, they're limited to something like 67 euros a day.
A day, that's right.
That they can withdraw. So that can happen. That can happen anywhere. America's not going to be immune from this either.
No, no, absolutely. No, that's right. And the other things to think about also are the, you know, there's... my understanding is that, you know, there's a huge derivatives debt, and that it's all just being sort of kept in check at the moment. And if, like with the 2007-2008 crashes, these are so much bigger, so we could really see something potentially quite catastrophic in the financial area. And that's going to come through. I mean, it's going to affect everything.
Everything and everybody. Yeah, well, I mean, this has been a really interesting discussion, Matt. So, unless we've got anything else to add.
I don't have anything else to add, Tony. Yeah.
No, I've pretty much covered what I wanted to say as well.
Yeah.
Just want to remind folks to visit our aminutetomidnight.com website and also subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already done so. And look at the great articles that we're even having on the website. We've got, you know, a team of five of us, and a lot of work's going into what we're doing, and it's growing all the time. And it's a great little team we've got, isn't it, Matt?
Great team, really good bunch of people who are really gelling together and really gelling with what God wants them to do as well too. So, yeah, thank you very much, Tony. That was really good talking about the stuff tonight, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty more of it.
Oh, absolutely. And we've got a couple of great guests coming up too in the next couple of weeks. So you will want to subscribe to our channel so you don't miss them. Also, I write and record all the music that we use on the Minute to Midnight shows. And you can find my music on rockshoresounds.com if anyone else is making videos or something like that and wants music or sound effects. If you support rockshoresounds.com, you're also helping directly to support aminutetomidnight.com. So I guess that's it for A Minute to Midnight for today. We'll see you in the next week or so, or probably in a few days. We'll have another one out pretty quickly, I think. So this is Tony signing off.
And this is Matt signing off as well, too. Thanks, folks.